This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hi there, I'm Lee, and I've recently fallen in love with old giant monster movies.
And I'm Sarah, and I hate watching movies.
And we're the hosts of Kaiju Coffee Break, where we talk about kaiju like Godzilla, King Kong, and Gamera.
And coffee.
Every episode, we talk about one kaiju movie over our morning coffee and tell you all about it. We're going to talk about what we loved.
What we didn't love.
What was awesome.
And what was ridiculous.
We're going to start with Godzilla, but then branch out into other kaiju movies as we go.
I'm so excited.
So tune in on pantspending.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Kaiju Coffee Break.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
A fear is an aphrodisiac for me. Cock that gun and put it to my head, I'll eat the shit out of that booty.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
World Studios in Spokane, Washington. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Sherry Hagen Hardman. And now your host. He's not worried about the wildfires because he's been burning bridges for years.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for coming around for another episode of the show. We got a great show. Comedian Sherry Hagen Hardman is going to be on. She is from the west side of Washington State. She's been doing comedy all over, has a show called Heavy Petty. We're going to talk to her in just a second. But real quickly, guys, just a little side note. The Social Minute still going strong. New episodes every Monday. We appreciate you guys patronizing that, enjoying it, sharing it, spread it around. If you enjoy something we do, guys, give it a like, give it a share. That's the most important thing. If you want, you can kick in some ducats, man. It's a pandemic and motherfucker trying to eat. So you can go to Deese Casillas, Deese-Casillas on Venmo and donate, or you can subscribe at deesecomedy.com. There's a donate subscribe button. You can do a one-time donation or a reoccurring one. Anything helps, man, because we bring you this content free no matter what. That's not going to stop, but you know, a little money to keep the bills paid is good. Also, guys, this weekend, Friday, I will be in Lewiston, Idaho with Rob Wentz and Josh Firesign, and then in Big Fork, Montana at Flathead Lake Brewing Company on Saturday the 26th also. So come check that out, guys. It's going to be a great weekend. I really, really looking forward to it. Yeah, come out, have some fun if you're in those areas, guys. If not, still come. Worth it. Fly. Do whatever. Anyway, go to Deese Comedy/calendar. Check out all the dates. There's all sorts of weird stuff, different stuff, but we're making a living, man. So anyway, we're going to get into it. Right now, please give it up for Sherry Hagen Hardman, everyone. I feel like just improving it and going with it keeps it organic, and that's the best way to do it. Makes it more fun and feel like it's not, you know, some weird forced stilted interview that like, these are the questions I wrote down and I'm trying to get through these bullet points.
Right.
Well, thanks for joining me, Sherry. As I was talking, as I was getting ready to do this and talk to you today, I realized something that like, I've known you for a while, but I don't know a lot about you. It turns out we're not on each other's Christmas card list, which I think we need to change. but Yeah, I mean, you know, we've done some shows together, events together, definitely been around the same clubs together and stuff, but I don't know a ton about you besides what I see online and stuff like that. So I was really wanted to kind of get your, in your own words, you know, how you started, where, you know, give us a little bit of backstory on you.
All right, so my life story or just like how I started in comedy or
I mean how exciting is your life story, right? Probably pretty
it's not that exciting. Really.
That's why you started doing comedy. You got to find something to keep you moving, right?
I didn't start comedy till I was 54 years old,
right? And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about too, because you know how long have you been doing comedy now?
5 years.
Yeah. Okay. And so, I mean, God, so what, you're 59 then? What was it at 54 that motivated you? Cause that's usually by 54, people are stuck in their ways. Like, you're not going to get Uncle Bob to stop using racial epithets at Thanksgiving dinner at 54. He's not turning the corner at, you know, 53 and a half.
Right.
So like what inspired you to make that change?
It was a bucket list thing. I'm not a conventional person. I didn't get married till I was 49.
Okay.
I had two kids before that, but like I've just been a single person my whole life.
Yeah.
Just doing one thing. Then I got married and then I started thinking about bucket list, just as in fun things to do. And like, I wanted to make sure I saw Elton John. I always wanted to see a Beatle. And I thought, I want to try stand-up comedy one time.
Yeah.
So, but like, I am the type, I like investigated a lot, did a lot of researching, like, how do you get to open mics and what do you do? And
right.
Went and watched a lot of times. And then I saw somebody was having a comedy class. And I had seen his videos on YouTube. And I know a lot of people think comedy classes are bullshit. But I think for someone that's just beginning, they're actually a good idea.
Sure.
So he was, the guy's name is Jerry Corley, and he was doing a workshop in Vegas, which is my favorite place. So I just went to Vegas for a weekend, took his workshop, did my very first open mic on the Vegas Strip at Treasure Island.
Wow.
And it was fun. And he told me I was really good. He didn't say that to everybody. So that was all I needed.
Yeah. That's a big first outing. Vegas, Treasure Island. That's got to, you know, that's going, that's,
yeah, so.
And, you know, after, and I mean, we know a lot of the same people. So from doing like, you know, not necessarily a gig, but a mic at Treasure Island in Las Vegas, and then doing like a bar gig in Burien, Washington. You're like, oh God, I should go back to Vegas. Maybe I'd have, you know. So what, did you live in Vegas at the time? Why Vegas? You were just down there.
I like Vegas. And he's out of Burbank. And so it was either Burbank or occasionally he did Vegas. And I'm a Vegas fiend.
Oh, I see. So you
I'm a compulsive gambler, so I can stay wherever I want to in Vegas free at pretty much any time.
Oh,
so.
Nice. That's a good. Yeah, that's the way to do it. If you're gonna be a compulsive gambler, you might as well get the free hotel stays out of it.
Yeah.
You know, right. You don't want to be like the compulsive gambler at the gas station keno machine. Like that doesn't, you know, you might get 5 cents off a gallon. That's about it.
Yeah.
Safeway does better than that. So you were just in Vegas, or you went to Vegas specifically for the class then? Is that what you're saying? So yeah,
right.
It was just kind of an opportunity to go somewhere you like and take this class.
And it was a 2-day thing. And the first night they let us do an open mic.
Yeah.
So.
You know, comedy classes are a weird thing. You know, a lot of people, like you said, you're right, do think they're bullshit. I think where the kind of, I delineate the validity of comedy classes is for someone like you who's kind of has a penchant, like an innate ability to do comedy. They can be beneficial. A lot of people just who are never gonna make it or not comedy minded assume that you can make someone who's like has no comedy sense into a comedian, and it's not really that. It's more like, you know, giving you tools if you are already, you know, have that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was like, you know, technique, you know, how to hold the mic,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. But it was all, you know, he also has a technique for just when you're, that I still use when you're stuck writing a joke. It's called the listing technique. And I still use that when I'm stuck.
What's that technique? Can you share the secret with us?
Yeah. So if you want to write a joke, you can just take two unalike things. Like, I'll just pick two things that are right here. All right. Back scratchers. And I know I'm not on camera, but I'm just showing
you.
And what's this? Air conditioner.
Okay.
All right. So then you make your list and then like write a line down the middle. And then on the left side, every word you can think of that has to do with back scratchers.
Mm-hmm.
And on the right side, every word you can think of that has to do with hair conditioner.
Yeah.
And then you just start looking at it. And then sometimes you're able to just pull parallels and write jokes. It's helpful when you're stuck. It really is.
I can see how it would be. I've never gone that in depth into writing a joke, like never taken those particular steps. I mean, I've certainly start dissecting things and trying to figure out deeper into this to get another tag or something else out of it. But that's a really interesting concept. And it's a really simple one too, that a lot of people probably could benefit from, you know, those little tricks of like, hey, this is just, you know, distill down what you're trying to talk about and figure out a way to be more specific. Cause you know, we all know specificity is one of the keys to comedy too. You know, the more specific, if you, you know, you can say this dog, but if you say this, you know, labradoodle, like all of a sudden, like the labradoodle alone kind of just sounds silly. You know, that's like, you start picking words and ways to phrase things that, you know, have a rhythm to them, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So your first mic 5 years ago in Las Vegas, how did you feel you did? You know, he said you did pretty well. He said you did well, you know, how do you feel you did?
I thought nobody was laughing. I went back to my hotel room that night and listened to it and they were laughing.
Yeah.
For a first time open mic. Yeah. Pretty good. But like compared to what I am now, like terrible.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, isn't it interesting? I was cleaning up some files in my studio a month ago or so, and I stumbled across some video files of early comedy stuff of mine, and I watched one of my first open mics, and I was like, I could not throw up enough to like, I was like, what part of that made me think I should keep going? You know.
How long have you been doing comedy?
In some form or fashion for about 13 years or so. Yeah,
okay.
About 13 years or so, probably closer to 15. I said 10 forever, and then I realized I'd been saying 10 years for like 5 years. I'm like, oh, time is progressing. I'm not keeping up with time. I started in stand-up, then I went away from stand-up for a number of years and did other forms, mostly comedy writing, and then I went back to doing stand-up pretty hard about probably close to 7 years ago now. So, yeah. But yeah, it's so funny that, you know, your first time out, it's nice that I like the self-awareness that you didn't feel like you were getting laughs on the stage, because we both have been at open mics where you see someone go up there and just, you know, eat shit, and then they come off and they're like, that was pretty good.
They're like, I killed.
Killed who? Killed me having to listen to that shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, the self-awareness of being like not feeling like it's good enough is one of those markers of like, oh, that's like, yeah, even if it was good, you're like, that wasn't good enough, I can do better, I have to do better, you know. Are there any early concepts or jokes that you wrote or did at that mic, or early ones that you still do or use?
Most of it.
Oh wow.
Most of it. I still do,
yeah,
just in a different form.
Sure Yeah, it kind of evolves and you kind of become better.
It has morphed, right, for sure. I know, it's time to start writing some new stuff. But, you know, it's like I started off and I had 5 minutes, and then I had 7, and then I had 10, and now I'm up to 45.
Right.
That I can do confidently.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to get to an hour before I started all over, you know, and I just that's kind of, you know, everybody does things differently, but.
No, I think that's the good, you know, you really have to, again, it sounds like you're objective about your time. You know, again, we meet those people that are like, they're less than a year into comedy. Like, yeah, I'm going to headline a show. I'm like, with what, man? A year into comedy? There's no way you have an hour a year into comedy. Like, what is happening? Like, you got, like, that takes time, you know? And definitely, I mean, you, like, 5 years in, yeah, I would feel like that you should be confident about 45 minutes to an hour for sure. That's a good kind of time frame.
And my laughs per minute is pretty high.
Yeah.
I don't just stand up there and talk like some people do and think that that's good enough. I just don't do that.
Yeah, there's those different, I mean, who was it? I guess Bill Hicks says, if you're not going to be funny, at least be interesting. So there is that, mm-hmm. But there's also, yeah, there's a lot of like filler space time where you're like, all right, well, where are you going with this? Are you making, where's the mm-hmm. jokes at? So what were you doing before you got into comedy?
Well, I'm still doing it. I work at a high school. I'm a paraeducator.
Oh, okay.
So I work, I work with high school kids. Right now I'm in an English classroom.
Okay.
With kids that need a little extra help.
Sure.
I've been doing this about 20 years.
How is that working right now with, you know, COVID and everything? Are you guys in school? I mean, what's happening over there? You know, I mean.
No, we're doing it all on the computer.
Okay.
And it's interesting because, you know, high school kids, so, yeah, you know, we're on a Zoom and they all have their video turned off and their audio turned off. And, you know, if we ask a question or something, then we have to wait for them to either turn their audio back on and talk or to type an answer in, or they don't. And then we know that they're really not there. So it's very challenging.
I would imagine. I mean, you said you do high school. So is that, you know, 9th through 12th? Is that
9th through 12th? Yep.
How is, I mean, I that's got to be difficult too, challenging as someone who was helping people with, you know, certain handicaps. I assume the, you know, hands on is kind of why you're there. So via Zoom, how does that work, helping these people with their needs when you're doing it virtually?
Well, you can pull them into a breakout room and, you know, have like a little small group. We haven't gotten to that point yet. We've only been in like a week
or something,
you know. So right now I'm just kind of keeping notes of who's paying attention and who's not, and who seems to be getting it and who isn't, and who's not answering when the teacher calls their name. And
yeah,
I'm just kind of keeping track of stuff like that for the moment.
Now,
so
class sizes are truncated fairly too, aren't they? What are you, like 17, 14 people for a class?
Maybe.
Something like that.
15 to 20 usually, yeah.
And is the entire class people with special needs, or is it just certain people in the class that are kind of
they're mostly students who just have a normal, let's say IQ, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term, but a specific deficit in English only.
I see. Okay.
So they test lower on writing or reading or whatever.
Yeah. Have you always done English, or what, you do other?
No.
Oh, so you bounce.
10 years I was in. 10 years I was in the behavior classroom.
That's probably a little more extreme, a little more challenging.
Where students had social, emotional, or behavioral disabilities.
Yeah.
And that was really that was my favorite.
Was it just because they're more challenging, but there's also more reward because of the challenge? Is that kind of that, you know, they need that helping hand a little bit more? They're not getting it at home as much. Is that kind of?
Well, they don't like anybody.
Uh-huh.
So if you're one of only like two people that they like in the school, that feels good.
Yeah.
That you can get through to them when other people can't.
Sure. Yeah, that takes a certain type of personality too to be able to work with people like that. And successfully too, because it's, you know, the challenges I imagine are pretty.
So you notice that even when I talk about helping people, it's still about me.
Well, you know, that's it. That's,
I just heard myself and I'm like, yeah, that's really what it's about. It makes me feel good. That's why I like it.
Well, isn't that what everything's about, you know, in life? We all say it's about, you know, no one's selfless, Sherry. We're all, right. You know, we don't do comedy because for the love of the game. It's because our parents didn't love us and we need attention to make up for it now, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, does any of that type of life or that type of work bleed into your comedy style or comedy set? Like, do you talk about that stuff or is it, you know?
I have two bits that I do about working at the high school. One is called High School Wrestling Boners.
I think I've heard that. I think I know that one.
Yeah. And then the other one is called Dick Pic because I had a former student send me a dick pic.
Oh, yeah? Were they an of age student when they sent it at that time, or was it while they were a student?
No, it was after he graduated.
Okay, so they were like,
"That's
hey."
That's why he felt so bold. Like, "Hey, I know you've been waiting for this." You know, like, no.
How do you reply to I'm going to assume 18, 19 year olds at that time, you know, that age group, sending you a dick pic? Cause you, what was it, via text, Facebook? How do you,
it was a Facebook Messenger. He friend requested me and yeah. That'd be nice to hear from him. And I answered it. And then he called me sexy.
Oh,
in the next message. And I was like, ha ha, whatever. How have you been? And then he sent that, and then I just looked at it for a while, and then I blocked him.
After you saved it, yeah, that goes in the file. I have a file in my computer that's called Green River, and it's just all the shit that I don't want anyone to see. So if anyone ever hacks my computer into the Green River file, I just wanted to name it something inert, like something that was like really like, no, that sounds so boring, right? Who's gonna look in the Green River file? Like, so
that's funny.
That's my I call it my federal indictment file, where it's just like, you don't, that's the one you don't want to look
that's
at.
That's the one that your best friend's gonna wipe off your computer when you die.
Yeah My cousin, she has a key to my house. She stays at my house when I'm not here. She has explicit instructions to just destroy all the hard drives and take care of my dog. She knows what's up. Yeah, she knows what to do. So how have you been dealing with the everything in the last, you know, 6 months and the lack of comedy?
I've been really sluggish. I don't want to say depressed because I don't really have depression, but I'm as close to being depressed without being depressed as a person could be, really.
Yeah.
It's like, this was like a big, I had like my first Vegas casino, gig booked. And I had my first, I was going to start doing my own show at Tacoma Comedy Club. And so those things were coming up for me within just like right, April was going to be my month. And it all just went to shit in March. And so it really just felt like everything I've been working for just got pulled out from under me. And, you know, and I'm old and I've got physical disabilities. Like, God, this might be I might die any day. You just never know, you know?
Don't say that. So, come on. You're going to be pissing on all our graves, Sherry. We're all, what a crazy, you know, I'm sure so many people had similar six, you know, obviously similar experiences in comedy and beyond. But yeah, it's just like, you know, it seems like a lot of those people, and really, you know, the worst, I think the people who are going to get hit the hardest are people like you and people like me and other comics we know that are kind of that, you know, on the bubble of like being able to like really, really like, you know, not like a nationally touring headliner, but consistently working and have our running our own shows and stuff. And that's like, that's the type of thing where now where we're on our way up, well, now all the headliners above us are so desperate for work that they'll take anything, you know? I mean, goddamn, Brian Regan, who's been selling out, like, soccer stadiums for the last decade, was doing, like, a weekend at Looney Bins in fucking Poughkeepsie for $35 a ticket a month ago. Like, that's what we're up against now. And if Brian Regan, you know, if Looney Bins is like, should we hire Brian Regan or Deese Casillas? I think we all know which direction they're going to go in. And
that's what I was saying, is it's putting all of us back more, you know, and kind of almost like who knows what's going to happen? Like, are we ever going to have comedy clubs again?
Yeah.
Like, I really felt like the need to find another way, like Zoom open mics and Zoom shows. Doing stand up is ridiculously awful.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I can't. I keep trying and I just keep going no. But, you know, other kind of shows are fun, you know, like a debate show or, you know, something like that, or like, you know, just those offshoot different kind of shows. No, those are okay. Those are fun. So,
like the game show type improv stuff. Right. That's more interesting. Yeah, I agree. I've done some of those. I ran a few. I have vehemently refused to do any or any stand-up Zoom shows, though. I have not done one yet. I don't plan to. I don't need $25 that desperately to, and I know there's that old, like, oh, well, any mic time is mic time. And I'm like, I don't know if that's good mic time, though. That's probably,
It's not helpful.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting, you know, even if you're doing like an open mic, well, you're not getting the reaction to be able to gauge whether that was working or not.
Right.
And it's just, it makes you feel like a piece of shit, really.
Yeah. And I already feel enough. So I don't.
So who needs that?
I don't need something else reaffirming my feelings. I talk to my therapist about every week already.
Exactly.
So no Zoom shows. You tried a couple. You said you're better than me. You gave it a shot at least. I said no right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And did you do any where there were an audience? Or you could hear the audience?
Actually, there was one that was okay.
Okay.
Carol Freeman and Derek Wolfe ran one.
Okay.
And they brought audience members in. I mean, I don't know. I think there was an audience, but there was enough people that people were laughing. And that was the only one that was okay.
Yeah, because you can actually, I mean, it's still not the same, but it's at least a step towards the light.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done small shows, you know, where nobody showed up.
Sure.
If you have 10 people, I mean, you can live with yourself after that.
Yeah.
You know, if it goes okay.
Yeah, you could sometimes, you know, shows like that, if it's a small, you know, if it's the right crowd and a small crowd, you can actually kind of make it kind of this fun, intimate thing. And it kind of turns into like... Yeah. You know, and you can really play with the crowd a little bit more, and it's easier to manage because you're not trying to manage 350 unruly people. You're just trying to talk, you know, like, and they're kind of like, this guy's doing his best. There's 10 people, you know, he's like, what the fuck? You know, we're just here. So, I mean, what about writing? Have you been able to write much at all during this time or?
I think I wrote one joke in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
I sit down and I try and I can't. I don't know what it is. I just can't.
You know, it's weird. I think because I had that same problem too. I do a lot of comedy writing, but not necessarily for stage. And that's a little different. But like stage jokes are a very different beast when you're writing comedy. And like I think I wrote... I did a couple shows the last few weeks and that inspired me to write a couple bits. But before that, in the like few months before that, I'd written two jokes. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm not, you know, we're not living any life. We're not having a chance to try these jokes. We're not, you know, it's like, oh, I woke up today and the world still sucks and we're all dying and have no money. Like, I don't know how to write a joke about that, you know?
Yeah, we're done talking about what we watched on Netflix today and writing jokes about it. Those are all We're all living the same reality. So everybody's, if people are writing jokes, it's all the same jokes and just a different variation.
Right, right. Well, and that, isn't that going to be such a interesting, like, thing when, if we survive and comedy goes back, like, you know, people, you know, everyone wants to have like their hot take on the 6 months of COVID. And it's like, can we just skip that part?
Talk about it. But, you know, some of my jokes are ruined now, too, because of it.
Yeah. How so?
Like my, okay. Where I say, you know, time, I'm getting old. Time goes by so fast. Seems like just yesterday I was getting finger banged at a Styx concert.
Yeah.
And then I say, today I got finger banged at Old Country Buffet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's no Old Country Buffet. There's no place where old people are going to get finger banged anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are old people going to get? They got to go somewhere, you know?
So there's one.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. It does change things. It is a weird phenomenon. Like, you know, and I mean, you just wonder how too. I mean, you know, when it comes back, are we going to, like you said, have crowds, or is it going to be this half capacity thing where we're just stuck in this weird limbo of like,
yeah. And you know how much fun a comedy show is when everybody's way spaced out.
Right. Yeah.
Not sitting intimately next to each other.
Yeah, it's a great time.
It makes a difference. It does make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's the, you know, one of the things that you realize in comedy is, yeah, compact, lots of people packed together towards the stage, and you're mm-hmm. going to have a better show, but we got none mm-hmm. of that. So what have you been doing then to stay busy during this whole time? I mean, you've had, you know, you obviously most of that time you weren't working your job. Schools weren't open. You had no comedy. What have you been doing?
Watching a lot of TV. And then there for a while, my husband and I were having a lot of sex. And
yeah.
I was keeping a sex calendar and posting it on Facebook just for fun.
Like daily? Or like multiple times a day? What are we talking?
Yeah.
God.
I mean, you know, he's younger than me. He's what, 53?
That's like, he's still
and
got
he's
it.
Got a really good, he's got a really good circulatory system. So, you
he
know.
Turns over fast. He's a fast.
He really.
Reboots.
Yeah, it's amazing. But,
the computer reboots pretty quick.
Yeah, so we were doing a lot of that, and then I kind of got tired of it. It's like, yeah, I think we just got tired of each other. Like,
yeah, you know, we should start banging other people. Like,
just it didn't seem appealing. No, but so I have a son who has multiple disabilities, and so he's in a wheelchair part of the time. He can also walk, but my husband and I bought him this. We bought it like, you know, I'm in a fat lady scooter. And mm-hmm. my husband and I bought him a two-person scooter. So my husband and my son can ride on this together.
Oh, wow.
And it's really sporty looking. It came from Australia, and it's bright green. And when we take it places, people just, like, love it and go kind of net. And so we've been going on, you know, we have a BPA trail here in Federal Way. And we drive it to the store and go up to the school. And my husband plays disc golf, so we'll go places he can throw his discs, and it's actually been really fun. So
is it a side by side scooter, or is it a one in front of the other? What are we talking
here?
One
in front of the other.
Okay,
one in front of the other.
Yeah, I was gonna say side by side would be tough to get through places. Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, and neither one of them are really very big people, so they fit on it just right. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you guys are over. Excuse me. You guys are over on the west side of Washington State. For those of our listeners who aren't in the local Northwest region, where I broadcast from is on the eastern, border of Washington State, Spokane, Washington, and the far west side, Tacoma, Seattle, kind of Federal Way, I think is where you said you guys are at. How's it been over there? I mean, I know the west side got kind of crazy during the riots, and then some of the protests, and, you know, with Chaz and Chop, whatever you're calling it, on Capitol mm-hmm. Hill, all that stuff. I mean, did any of that bleed down to you guys, or how's that been for?
No, I think at Federal Way, they did some just strictly peaceful protests where they just stood on the side of the road with signs. And
yeah,
that was all that happened here. You know, the other stuff was, there was a little bit in Tacoma, but mostly in Seattle. And we, you know, we're staying with two of us being medically compromised. We just stayed in.
Yeah.
So.
Has that kind of been your way it's been going the whole pandemic for you? Just kind of stayed in, not gone out and done much then? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even go out to a restaurant or anything until just like a month or two ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a tough transition.
My husband would go to the grocery store, and then Andrew and I just stayed here.
Yeah.
That's like insane making, because I am not a homebody at all.
Yeah. Well, especially doing comedy. I mean, you're out, you're social, you're around people constantly, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, mm-hmm. 5 to 7 nights a week probably. And then from that to complete isolation is a real, I mean, that's a real big change.
Yeah. I wrote like a poem. I'm not really a poet, but I did write a poem. I had it on my blog about, I felt like I was being erased.
Oh, wow. That's very, very profound.
Like, it was just like, yeah, that's kind of what it's been feeling like. So.
I can see that.
I do notice it now that I'm working, just having to get up and take a shower and put clothes on, even though I'm sitting in front of the computer, I feel much better now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, humans need a purpose. We have to have some kind of like thing we're supposed to be accomplishing, and we know no matter what it is. And if you have nothing, it's really easy to kind of spin out of control and kind of lose sight and focus mm-hmm. really, really quickly, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad you found some stuff to kind of back on track to keep you busy. And then, mm-hmm. I'm fortunate enough that, you know, I live near Idaho and Montana. I've got some rooms I set up over there that I've been doing for a while. So like I've been able to work some, is there any hope or any private shows, underground things, anything, Oregon, anything you guys are looking at to try to be able to do live comedy again?
No.
You're so defeated. It's just so, oh God, I know.
I'm just giving up. Oh, it'll happen when it happens.
Yeah.
If it happens.
Right.
I'm kind of feeling like I got a bunch of like, you know, gig salad leads.
Okay.
You know, like, bid on doing these shows. And I was just like, no. But then I started like, after the last couple, I was like, I might start saying yes to these because I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean,
we'll see.
Are you worried about ring rust or anything like that? Like the
ring rust?
Yeah, like ring rust, like boxers, like the idea of not going up, not fighting for a while. They feel like they lost their, you know, their fastball kind of. You think when you go back up for the first time, you're going to feel a little off or anything?
Well, I noticed that like I'm going to have to definitely practice up before I do one because I've forgotten a lot of it. It's not right at the tip of my head, you know?
Yeah, that snappiness of it.
I mean, I don't think I've lost it. It's just it's dormant right now.
Sure,
so.
It's just that repetition. You gotta mm-hmm. bring that back, get that going again.
Yeah.
So, well, tell us about, you do have a show that you do called Heavy Petting. I see your blog on the back. People are not going to see it because this is all on audio, but they don't see your logo back there. Well, tell us about that.
So Heavy Petting is a show where I bring usually comedians, but not always on.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring their pets and we talk about their pet a little bit. And then we switch over to talking about heavy petting of the human variety.
Oh, okay.
Which I realized I had to explain because a lot of the younger people didn't know what it meant. You know, so back in the day, heavy petting was a euphemism for making out.
Right.
And so I just have them tell me a story about love or sex or dating or something in that realm.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. Now we've done some shows where like the comedian didn't have a pet. And I had an animal rescue that we were working with.
Mm-hmm.
So we would highlight a pet that needed a home.
Oh, that's good. I love that.
But we're not working with them right now. And then we tried to do it live. And sometimes when you bring animals into a green room, they may or may not have explosive diarrhea all over the green room. So I thought I should probably rethink that.
Yeah, so. That's tough. Yeah, that's unpredictable, unfortunately, with an animal.
It is.
You know,
it's nice now that we can do heavy petting on Zoom.
Yeah.
We used to do them in person, but they are doable in Zoom.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Now, how often do you do that show?
I release an episode once a week.
Once a week. And any pets, you know, dogs, cats, birds, what do you have?
We have dogs and cats. This week we have a guinea pig.
Oh, okay.
We've had a rat, a chicken, and a goat. So.
Interesting.
We're versatile.
Yeah. I was down in Lodi, California a couple months ago, just on a road trip, and I was at this guy's little... a small little ranch. It's, you know, Lodi is about 30 miles outside of Sacramento, kind of rural area. Mm-hmm. And this guy's got some property and we're hanging out and he's got some goats. And he's like, he goes, you know, they say goats have the most lifelike vagina next to a person. And I'm like, how do you know that? Who studies that?
Why do you tell someone that?
Yeah. Are you asking me to fuck one of your goats right now? What do you tell you? Like, I'm not saying you have to, but if you want to, it's there for you, buddy. I'm like, what the hell? Like, who got the grant money to study most lifelike, human-like vagina on an animal?
I think he was speaking from personal experience. Yeah.
I had to imagine. He's like, listen, I got goats, chickens, pigs, and cows on this. I've fucked all of them. I just need you to know that. The one that was closest to a human vagina was the goat.
Okay. Well, we don't do that on our show. Yeah. Let me just be qualified.
Not an endorsement of banging goats.
The heavy petting is between the humans.
Humans, yeah. Yeah, it is funny that you say you had to explain that term to people that they wouldn't get it, like heavy petting or necking, things like that. I assume a lot of kids... Uh-huh.
Was Naren and Josh actually that didn't know what it was.
What?
Yeah.
Shame on those guys.
But, you know, they're a lot younger than I am, so. Okay.
They're not that much younger than me, are they? I don't know. Yeah, they're probably not 10 years younger than I am, but pushing 10 years, I bet. So, you know.
So. I mean, there might have been others that didn't know, but they were the first ones to say, I don't know what that means. So,
wow, man, those guys, well, they grew up in some sort of Christian household. These guys never done some heavy petting. Josh has kids. I know he's done some, or a kid. I know he's done some heavy petting.
Yeah. We did a naked episode a couple weeks ago. That was fun.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
How did that work? Did you have a guest?
There was four of us, so I had three guests. I let the audience vote out of all the people that had been on heavy petting who they wanted to see naked.
Okay.
But we did it on Zoom and on Facebook, so we had to, you know.
Edit it out.
Yeah, it was just from the neck up. Oh, from the chest up, but it was still fun.
But you guys were all naked in the show.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
Who got naked? Who are the guests? Do I know any of them?
It was Levi Manis.
I know Levi, yeah.
And Andy Vargo and Trista Bloom.
I don't know if I know either of them. I definitely know Levi, though. I feel like he's naked most of the time anyway.
You know, he had never even been on heavy petting, so he just was a... Somebody's wife wouldn't let them be on, so he was the substitute for that person.
Well, that's all right. Levi's a great substitute for anything.
I thought if there was anybody that would be fun being naked, it would be Levi.
Yeah, he's great. I love him. I told him a couple weeks ago, I'm like, you might be the hardest working guy in this non-comedy we exist in right now, because that guy's cranking out like one-liners. Like 7 a day on Facebook.
I know.
I love it. So
yeah, he's great. I like him a lot.
It's nice to see that, you know, these people like him and that are still at least trying to produce something, you know. They're not like jokes you're going to take to stage or, you know, they can't go much further than like a Twitter or Facebook joke, but like, you know, it still keeps those synapses firing, you know.
Right, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, Sherry, I got, let's see, before we wrap this up, I do a I do a segment at the end of every show with my first time guests called The Rundown. The Rundown is a series of questions I've developed over the years. Individually, they don't mean much, but when you put them together, they just start to kind of paint a tapestry, a little algorithm of someone's personality. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and we'll just have you answer them. Honestly, I don't have a lie detector attached to that chair there of yours, all but right. I will just take your word for it, okay?
All right, should I be afraid?
No, don't be afraid. They're all pretty simple okay. questions. Okay. We'll start with something simple, like what's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie?
Yeah.
You have one favorite, like...
Desert Island, you get one movie for the rest of your life. What is
so I have to watch it over and over and over and over and over again.
Well, you don't have
That's
to ever you don't ever have to watch it, but you'd be it's the only one you could watch, let's say.
You're gonna laugh at me. Sex in the City.
Which one? The first one or the second one?
The first one.
Okay. That was
And you know why though? I would pick that one because for however many years that show was on, they were my best friends.
Yeah.
They were my girlfriends I hung out with every Sunday night. And when they went away, it was traumatizing. I was sad.
Yeah.
So to have them back is like welcoming back my best friends into my life. So that would be comforting.
You could have your friends on the island with you. Mm-hmm. That's nice. Mm-hmm. All right. I like that answer. Okay. All right. How about your, what's your go-to karaoke song?
If I don't feel confident, I know I can always nail I Love Rock and Roll.
Okay. Joan Jett.
Like, yeah, but that's karaoke 101.
Yeah, but that's a great song though. But have you ever seen Joan Jett live?
Yes, I have.
She's amazing live.
She's really good. Like I saw her and Pat Benatar within a couple months of each other. And Pat Benatar was old and tired and really didn't want to be there. And Joan Jett was still having fun and putting on a good show.
Yeah. Yeah. That is not my genre of music per se. And I'm actually not a huge fan of live music, but I used to go to this event once a year in Spokane. There's a big car auction in Spokane. And it's like this big one in the Northwest. And people I know who own car dealerships in Spokane would invite me because they'd have like this live concert for like, it'd be like 300 people, private invite only, and be like catered with good food and free beer. And I'm like, all right, cool. It's a night out. I'll hit on some MILFs. The one year was Joan Jett. And I was like, God damn, I'm like, this girl rocks. Like, she is out there just, I'm like, I don't know how old she is. She's probably pushing 60 at the time, I bet. And I'm like, this girl just is like, performance wise, killing it, having fun. I'm like, that was one of the best live performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, she's really good.
Oh, yeah. It's
I agree.
Yeah, I hope I have half that much energy when I'm that age. So, how about we'll stick with music with what is a guilty pleasure song of yours? A song that like, you know, you love, you're cranking it, having a good time, you're rolling down, driving down the street, you come up to a bus stop and there's a bunch of people at the bus stop and those windows got to go up. You got to roll the windows up so no one hears you listening to the song.
Oh, because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Anything. Anything by Barry Manilow.
Oh, dude, Copacabana is one of my, that's actually one of my go-to karaoke songs. Yeah. I think Copacabana might have been the first karaoke song I ever karaoke.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have seen Barry Manilow in concert like 5 times.
Oh, really?
I am maybe 6. I'm a fan of Low. I am.
Wow.
But, you know, it's kind of not cool, but hey.
I could dig it.
I'm
with you, Sherry. If we're ever riding a car together and cranking Barry Manilow, those windows are staying down, baby.
All right.
Down.
All right.
I'm all about that. All right. Let's, how about this? Let's talk about pizza. Everyone loves pizza, right? If you could have any pizza you wanted, you can have any toppings on it. Not from a specific place, just in general, toppings on a pizza.
Okay.
But now that's the only type of pizza you can have for the rest of your life. You can never deviate. What would those toppings be?
Oh, well, you're going to probably think this is weird. Shrimp.
Oh.
Pineapple, mushrooms, and onions.
Interesting. I've certainly never heard that combination for that answer, but I could see the appeal. A little tropical, a little interesting.
Have you ever had shrimp on a pizza?
I don't think I have.
So good. Well, like when we were kids, we used to go to this place. It was called Red Baron, but not like the crappy, shitty frozen pizza.
Yeah.
And we used to get the shrimp pizza. And ever since then, I'm a big fan, but most places don't have it.
Yeah, that's a little exotic. Is it like the little tiny little shrimps? Like little tiny shrimp?
Well, it can be, but now it's usually the bigger ones.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll have to try it sometime. Maybe I'll make some pizza. I like to make pizza sometimes. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you could pick two celebrities to be your parents, who would they be?
Jane Fonda and let's go Alan Alda.
Alan Alda, huh? Wow, mm-hmm. It's a MASH action. Why Jane Fonda and Alan Alda?
He's famous for being a feminist.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
And Jane Fonda, because she's gone through a lot, kind of come around and just been everywhere and done a little bit of, you know, piss people off when she was younger.
Yeah.
And kind of now most people love her, except the ones that are still mad at her for what she did way back in 1970,
yeah,
whatever it was. So I don't know. I like her.
Yeah. She might have aged better than almost anyone who's ever been alive.
For sure.
Like, you look at her now, and I'm like, that woman is how old? Like, that...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, like that... she's so beautiful.
She really is.
Yeah,
doesn't have that... She's probably had work, but she doesn't have that, like, Cher looks too old, but Jane looks great.
Yeah. No, some people get, like, that very... Like, so there's... You know, like Paul McCartney has been like, he's like 78 years old and he doesn't have any gray in him. It's like, dude, just let a little gray go around the temples. Like, let it come in. We know you're covering it up. Just do a little so we don't, you know, it's not so glaring. But, and, you know, like Cher looks too like plastic and fake. Like Jane Fonda, I'm sure she's got some work done, but she still looks like distinguished and has a little bit of character because of her age. But yeah, definitely is. Like, yeah.
That, still got a banging body and everything, you know?
Tell me about it. Listen, she's a tight... Listen, I'd leave my wife and kids for her. And I don't even have a wife and kids. I'd get married and have kids just to leave them for Jane Fonda.
Yeah, for sure.
Abandon them in
me
a heartbeat.
Me too.
All right, if... let's say... if they wait... If they... let's go with theme song of your life. What do you think the theme song to your life would be?
All I Do Is Win.
All I Do Is Win? Who's that by?
DJ Khaled.
Oh, okay. Damn. Wow. Bringing out the heat. The new bangers.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could have named that one even.
It's a good song. It's really like if you want to get pumped up before you go into and that's just really like, I was gonna say I Will Survive, but wow, that's just so.
Donna Summer.
I like
all
to
right.
think of it more like I'm not just surviving, but like
thriving.
If I make my mind up on something, I'm gonna win. I'm gonna make it through that.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to apply that to my life right now, but yeah, that would be it.
Okay. I like that attitude. Do you listen to music before you go on stage? Like, how do you pump yourself up? Like, what's your process before you go on stage?
I practice in the car the whole way there.
Okay.
Unless somebody's with me, but like my family, they have to listen to me constantly.
Sure.
Do it over and over.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Then I get nervous about an hour before, like I think I'm going to have diarrhea, and then I spend about 20 minutes worrying about whether I'm going to have diarrhea, but then after that, I'm fine. And it doesn't really matter what I do before a show.
Yeah. It's just kind of, yeah, you got to just zen
out. I don't want to eat though, just in case I'm going to get diarrhea.
So. Right. That's yeah. You don't want to be like that dog.
I don't want to be pushing anything down closer to the exit. So.
Right. I know I'm always like trying to evacuate my bladder and like let, you know, get before I go on stage. I haven't been checked, but I'm sure I have a prostate problem because I pee a lot. And I'm like, God, you know, I'm always worried about that time I have to like piss like a racehorse and I go up there and I'm like, fuck, I'm like 12 minutes into a, you know, 45 minute set. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like,
right.
Because I'm pretty sure you just can't say time out and hold everyone hold.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Well, hey, when I hosted for Stormy Daniels at Tacoma Comedy Club.
Yeah.
She left the stage in the middle to go to the bathroom.
You know, yeah. You know what? When you're a headliner, anything you do is quirky and funny.
Yeah.
You know, when you're
not at that stage yet, we got to pee before we go on.
Yeah. If you're middling and you want to get off stage, that club is firing you. You know, you're never working that club again. Yeah. Also, when you're like a stripper, porn star, or whatever she is, you can do whatever you want. Like, it's just people.
That's true.
It's just people who want to bang you, so they're gonna say yes. They don't give a shit at that point. You know. So, all right. Last question, Sherry. Let's go to music. You mentioned DJ Khaled, so let's talk about some hip hop. If you were a hip hop artist, what would your rap name be?
Oh,
You're doing a collabo.
That's a good question. I think.
Yeah, you're doing a collabo with DJ Khaled. Another one.
Oh, I've never thought of this before.
Oh, now let's see. This is your chance to figure out what your big rap.
I think we'd have to do. We have to. Let's call me. I don't know. What's a word for big that's pleasant? A pleasant word.
Oh, well, I mean, like, you know, Big Pun. Big Pun was great. He was, you know, had Big in it. Biggie Smalls. There's all the Bigs. Big L.
Right.
There's Heavy D. I mean, all these guys were, you know, bringing it. You know, you'd be like Thick with two C's.
I want to have a vagina in it. Somehow.
Okay.
But I don't want a big vagina, so let's not do that.
That's just not pushing a lot of records. The A&R guy says we gotta
read. We could put a V for the vagina, so we'll have a V.
Yeah. You'd be like,
and then what?
You could be like V Thick or Thick V or.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Banging them out. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Sherry. Well, before we get out of here, tell everyone where they can find you and follow you. Social media, the YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, your show, Heavy Petting, all that.
All right. You can find Heavy Petting on YouTube or Facebook or on a podcast near you.
All right.
It's Heavy Petting with Sherry Hardman. And I am at Sherry. Mm-hmm. On Instagram and Twitter, CHERIMMHMM.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go, guys. Well, find her, follow her, check out the shows, and be sure to keep an eye out for any upcoming shows. Cause I'm sure once everything gets back up and running, you're definitely going to see Sherry around performing. So be sure and follow us. You can get updates on all of that. All right, guys. And for me, just go to Deese Comedy/calendar. Check out all the dates. There are some dates coming back. Idaho, Montana. And then, as always, if you're in Spokane, Mondays I host Trivia at Spokane Comedy Club. So come check that out. That's fun. It's like a really sad version of when people did comedy. but it's fun. It's been fun. All right, guys. Well, Sherry, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you. It was good to see you. Good to talk to you. I'm glad you're surviving. I look forward to when we can do all this crazy thing in person again. So.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Sherry, for the social. I've been decent for Sherry. Thanks, guys. And we will see you next week.